Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
On a Tuesday, this is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, live in Los Angeles, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, The Herd hierarchy, top 10 teams in the NFL, hard this week. A lot of good teams. Joy Taylor is joining me on Tuesday today. Good morning. Well. You know, extra time means extra preparation. If you get extra time, 2 weeks to prepare for a test, you better nail it. If you have 2 weeks to prepare for a party, it better be good. If you have 2 weeks to prepare for your wife's anniversary, you got to do better than a card. Okay, my wife's already preparing for Thanksgiving dinner, a couple weeks out. Okay, so she's prepared. Extra time generally ensures more detail, better job. What I watched last night was the Dallas Cowboys off a bye. They had 2 weeks to prepare, and that's what they gave me. That was like showing and inviting all your relatives over for Thanksgiving that you prepared 2 weeks for and saying, walking out saying, hey, what do you guys want to do for dinner? Well, anybody got any ideas on dinner? Jason Garrett, that was awful. No juice. 2 weeks to prepare. 18 first downs off a bye. Under 300 yards total offense on a bye. 72 yards rushing on a bye. 25 minutes time of possession on a bye. That's the kind of game you get fired over. By the way, Andy Reid off a bye is 19-5. Bill Belichick off a bye is 30-13. Mike McCarthy off a bye is 12-5. Sean Payton, Mike Tomlin, Urban Meyer in college is 24-1 off a bye. Jason Garrett, sub 500. What does that tell you? That extra time doesn't help this staff and doesn't help Jason Garrett. I don't know what else you got to see. But if you have 2 weeks to prepare for a test or a date or a party or Thanksgiving or an anniversary, you can't mail it in with that. And what's really troubling for Dallas, they were terrible in the red zone. Well, what is the red zone? It play calling, situational, execution. For the record, the Tennessee Titans were playing off a bye. Did you notice how great they were on third down? They were excellent. That's the best Marcus Mariota's ever been in a third down. Did you notice how good the Titans were in the red zone? 4 to 5 trips to touchdown. The only issues the Titans had last night are fumbles, and that has nothing to do with coaching. I mean, that was embarrassing. The Titans offensive coordinator was the Rams OC a year ago. Matt LaFleur. He had 2 weeks to prepare. You see what you got there in Tennessee? Marcus Mariota, that's as good as he's ever been situationally. And Jason Garrett and Dak. And here's the amazing thing about Jason Garrett. It's not like he was a popular player. It's not like he has a big personality. It's not like he's a legend. I get firing Tom Landry was hard. I get if Troy Aikman was the coach of the Cowboys, that would be a hard guy to fire. That would reverberate through the Dallas Metroplex, right? I get that. Jason Garrett's not a big personality. His resume is 9 years, 500 coach. The only exception, when he leads the league in rushing. Well, good luck with that. I mean, you don't get that very often. I mean, there are statement wins and there are statement losses. At home, off a bye, against a struggling offense, and you made that offense. If it wasn't for fumbles, I don't even think I'm not even embellishing. If it's not for fumbles, that game could have been 28-0. I mean, what else does Jerry Jones need to see? That was brutal. I mean, that we got 9 years of a 500 coach, and I'm telling you, when you look at the best coaches in football off a bye, they all win generally twice as much as they lose. Tomlin, Peyton, Belichick, McCarthy, Gruden even, Reed, Harbaugh. Look at their winning percentages off a bye, 650, 750. John Harbaugh, 10-2. Urban Meyer, 24-1. Nick Saban's record. What was that? That was atrocious. 14 days to prepare, and you and Dallas was situationally embarrassing. I'm not a guy that calls for people's jobs, but if that doesn't get him run, I don't know what does. Not good enough. I mean, just not good enough. And juxtaposed with the Titans, who also have a young quarterback who's kind of struggling, and they have some wide receiver issues too, like Dallas. It was kind of like watching two teams going through the same stuff. The difference is, I mean, even both teams had a bye. The difference is one of them was tremendous situationally last night off a bye. One was pathetic. All right, let me shift to this. Patriots play Tennessee next. So the Patriots were watching Tennessee last night. Belichick was watching, but more importantly, Tom Brady said it after the game against Green Bay. I'll be watching Monday Night Football. We play Tennessee next. Well. I hope Tom Brady was watching that game, because did anybody notice who really struggled for Tennessee? Malcolm Butler is an utter disaster. He's a cornerback that Bill Belichick let go. And all the Patriot players, including Tom Brady, banged on Belichick. He doesn't know what he's doing. Bill lost us the Super Bowl. No, Bill didn't lose the Super Bowl. Somebody hit Tom Brady's arm. He fumbled. That lost the Super Bowl. By the way, Belichick did not lose the Super Bowl. New England never punted. Tom Brady's last three drives in that Super Bowl, touchdown, 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 all 75 yards. And then he finally got the ball one more time, and he was driving for the winning touchdown, and Philly couldn't stop him, and their defensive players was gassed, and it was going to look like every Super Bowl Tom Brady's been in, one possession, here comes Tom, beat Seattle, beat Atlanta, beat, and he fumbled. It was not about Malcolm Butler, who Belichick decided to sit. And there was a reason Belichick decided to sit Malcolm Butler, because when Belichick bails on a relationship, he's the world's best bailer. He's right, always. I mean, Chandler Jones has been pretty good in Arizona, but Chandler Jones had stuff off the field and was getting super expensive and hasn't won any games for Arizona if you've watched him play. Belichick was right on Nate Solder. He was right on Deion Lewis. He was right on Danny Amendola, and he's right on Malcolm Butler. By the way, the data was in, but everybody got too emotional because Belichick's the most powerful coach in the most powerful sport, and he mocks the media, and everybody was waiting for an opportunity to seize on him. We don't like all that power Bill's got, and so they lose the Super Bowl. Malcolm Butler, that's the reason. You're a bum. You're no good. You don't know what you're doing. Malcolm Butler was benched in the Super Bowl because in the previous two playoff games, he was targeted 11 times, 8 completions, 2 touchdowns, and the passer rating 146 from Blake Bortles and Marcus Mariota. He needed to be benched. And by the way, the guy that caught the touchdowns against Butler didn't have a touchdown catch all year before Malcolm Butler, in which he had 2. Listen, Belichick was right on Nate Solder. He was right on Amendola. He was right on Corey Dillon. He was right on every guy he's bailed on. Malcolm Butler can't play anymore. He can't play. I think he's rated like the 132nd, according to Pro Football Focus, like the 132nd corner in the league right now. And they paid him $30 million. So when Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and all you Patriot players, Bill doesn't know what he's doing. Bill cost us the Super Bowl. Bill Belichick's a dummy. Bill Belichick's the reason we lost him. When Belichick walks into Patriot Place today, I hope he walks in like Conor McGregor in an octagon. Get a load of me. Look at me. Who's feeling good about themselves today? Bill Belichick should do the Conor McGregor octagon walk. Because all you Patriot players, he lost us the Super Bowl. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's no good. He's right again. Malcolm Butler is a shot corner. And New England appears to be, once again, the best team in the AFC, if not all of football.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Great news if you're a Philadelphia Eagle fan. Long-term, great news if you're a Packer fan, a Viking fan, an L.A. Ram fan. I mean, just great news for everybody in the NFC, all the NFC teams. And the news is Jerry Jones in Dallas was talking this morning about the future of the Dallas Cowboys, the quarterback position, as it's become an incredibly quarterback-driven league, especially with all the rule changes this year. I mean, look who's leading all the divisions, Brady and Ben, and I mean, you go up, Goff and Phillip Rivers, Mahomes, it's, you know, Breeze and Cam, and all the top quarterbacks are leading their division. And except Aaron Rodgers, but, you know, there's some other issues there. But here's what Jerry said this morning on Dallas Radio about Dak and the quarterback position in Dallas.
Dak is completely capable of looking at what the situation was last night. You don't have anybody that's more capable to look at that and take it to the practice field and take it to learn from that for the next ball game.
Is he your quarterback for the next 10 years?
Dak is the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. He's young, and he's going to get extended.
Well, if you're in Philadelphia this morning, you thought they threw a parade after the Super Bowl. I get Carson Wentz, you get Dak for the next 10 years. I got to be honest about that. Now, just think about this. He's now the least efficient quarterback in his division. Well, there's Eli. Think about it this way. There were the last four games we've seen in the NFL. Let's think about the last four NFL games on TV. It was Rivers against Russell Wilson, Goff against Breeze, Rodgers against Brady, and Mariota against Dak Prescott. He was easily the least spectacular and the least efficient and the least talented. Those are the last four games we have watched in America on the NFL. And the last eight quarterbacks, Mariota is the seventh best, Dak's the eighth, and there's a massive gap apparently between those two. And I was thinking about this morning. Joy, I think I've told you this. I call it pen to paper. That, you know, a lot of times you think about stuff and think about stuff and you think something's right, but you got to put pen to paper and write it down. Like at your budget at home. You're like, you know, I think I'm saving enough. I don't think I'm wasting money. Put a pen to paper and see what you spend a month. And it's like, oh, I'm throwing $400 away a month. Put a pen to paper. Get that yellow pad and a pen and write down what you spend a month and how much on coffee. And sometimes you got to put a pen to paper. So let's put a pen to paper. There are 13 quarterbacks that nobody, even in Dallas, a Cowboy fan, could not argue are inferior or are superior to Dak. Brady's better. Breeze is better. Matt Ryan's better. Rodgers, Mahomes, Rivers, Cam, Russell, Luck, Big Ben, Wentz, Goff, Deshaun Watson. You can't make an argument. I mean, if you called my show and said one of those wasn't as good as Dak, I'd hang up on you. If I was having a party at my house and you said Dak's better than one of those 13, I'd throw you out of the house, even if it was Thanksgiving and a relative. You can't argue those. So at best, he's the 14th best quarterback in the league. Okay, then I have another list of nine guys who are all right now better statistically, and I think better. Alex Smith, Stafford, Kirk Cousins, Andy Dalton, Flacco, not much better. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Jimmy G, Mitch Trubisky, and Marcus Mariota. So there's 13 who are star quarterbacks, and there are nine who are better statistically, Flacco barely. He's the 23rd best quarterback in the league. Maybe I'm wrong on Flacco. He's 22nd. What has Jerry got to see? Jerry announcing this morning they're giving Dak Prescott an extension. And by the way, I admit, I didn't like him out of college. I didn't. I said he was a better Tebow. He just can't throw the ball down the field. Then he had a bizarre rookie year, and I'm like, okay, I was wrong. I don't know. And then by the middle of year two, I'm like, I like him as a kid, but he's not much of a thrower. I'm out. Folks, look around. Look around the league. College football is going to give us four more great quarterbacks this year. And that Tua kid at Alabama is coming out in 2 years, and he looks like the next Russell Wilson. Man, be very careful writing $100 million checks. But Jerry says that's the guy. Hey, Philadelphia, it's time for another parade.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like. Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
Minnesota Vikings have a ceiling, but their defense is starting to sort of resurrect itself from last year. I look at a handful of defensive statistics. One of them, third down defense. Right now, they lead the NFL in third down percentage allowed. Their league rank, so they're getting people off the field, and they're also very good in the red zone defensively. Again, Kirk Cousins in big games, don't trust him, but when you play defense like this, I think they're going to win their division, so Minnesota, number 10.
Number 9.
I thought the Houston Texans win in Denver was kind of a big deal. That's a tough place to play. The Texans' defense now, that front, is playing very well. And there are some things in football that make me smile. When quarterbacks who are young and talented, like an Andrew Luck or a Deshaun Watson, come off an injury, and they get right back into the groove. And Deshaun's last three games, 8 touchdowns, no interceptions, 133 quarterback rating. He's a remarkable young talent. He's a good dude. He's mature enough, emotionally strong. This is going to be Andrew Luck and Deshaun Watson's division for many years to come. Texans at 9.
Number 8.
Pittsburgh Steelers. I still don't think they're great with the details, and there's always too much noise for my taste, but their last three opponents have been held under 300 yards. I don't worry about the offense. Their pass rush is excellent. Mike Tomlin's a defensive coach. There's always going to be some things about the Steelers under Tomlin that drive me nuts, but when I see them get their defense right, I mean, James Conner, give credit to that staff. Statistically, is better than Le'Veon Bell so far. Steelers at number 8.
Number 7.
Eagles coming off a bye. By the way, Doug Peterson's 3-1, the 4 games off a bye, so that's a good sign. Peterson's a good coach. Philadelphia brings in Golden Tate, like the Cowboys with Amari Cooper on a bye. I think of all the acquisitions, this one is really going to be interesting. Golden Tate will be an extension of the running game, and it's really the part of their team. Their perimeter speed is marginal. They don't have playmakers on the perimeter. Nelson Aguilar's good. He's not great. So I think the Eagles, number 3 in third down defense, they get you off the field and get the ball back to Carson Wentz. Eagles at 7.
Number 6.
I put the Panthers one spot ahead of them. Even though Carolina was outplayed for 3 quarters against Philly, they came back and won in Philly in the 4th quarter. Now, Carolina's always been sneaky good at home. They were 8-0 at home a couple years ago. They're 5-0 at home this year. Their schedule gets much tougher. And of all the teams in the top 10, they're the least dynamic over the top. They're a running game, Greg Olsen, but Cam Newton deserves a ton of credit. He's not the MVP. He's the MVC. It's the most valuable Cam's ever been. 100-plus passer rating in 5 of his last 7 games. He has embraced Norv Turner. They're a power-running team. They don't make a ton of mistakes. He's now giving you multiple touchdowns a game. Carolina's schedule, though, gets much tougher this point forward. I got him at 6.
Number 5.
LA Rams. You know, even when I had him number 1, I said every week, they don't have a consistent pass rush. I don't like this Dante Fowler move. He's a me guy. He's kind of doing his own thing. Marcus Peters this weekend. Reverted back to Marcus Peters. Why Andy Reid let him go? Doing his own thing. Ndamukong Suh in Miami, they let him go. Doing his own thing. I don't like the Fowler move. I think the way they look at it, with their offense, they're going to be leading playoff games, and they can't sleep at night if they don't get Dante Fowler, a pass rusher. I don't think he's worth 2 picks. I don't think he's a great locker room guy. Now, again, against the Saints, 45 points, 480 yards, no sacks. Now, I know New Orleans' offense is good. It's not that good. And remember, Seattle dropped over 30 on this team. They've got some defensive issues. I don't think their linebackers are playmakers, good in space, and I don't think Fowler solves their pass rush.
Number 4.
Chargers are good enough to win the Super Bowl, except they just cut their field goal kicker. Doesn't it seem like they're always cutting their field goal kicker? They really dominated Seattle. The score doesn't indicate that because they left 7 points off the board because of PATs and field goals missed. But they've won 5 straight. In 4 straight games, their defense has allowed fewer than 20 points, and they're doing this without Joey Bosa. So they're only going to get better. Chargers at 4.
Number three.
I put Kansas City above them, and I think it's really close simply because Kansas City has had the Chargers' number over the last several years. They're averaging 36 a game, first in the league, most by any team through week nine since the 2013 Broncos. That was the Peyton Manning Broncos. Listen, Andy Reid's a great coach, a great play designer, and they have a fireworks show of talent. Eric Berry comes back at safety, helps. Houston defensive end will help. I still think they can be a little sandlot offensively, so I'll put them at three.
Number two.
New England Patriots right now would represent to me the AFC in the Super Bowl. They've won six straight. It's your typical New England story. Not great in September. We all claim they're dead. They get red hot in October. And then in November, they play a big Sunday night football game, and they just look fantastic situationally. I'll tell you this, Trey Flowers, anybody notice him Sunday? Defensive lineman, boy, he has become a force. He has become a top 10 defensive lineman in this league. And remember, Sunday, no Sony Michel and no Gronk, and they still won.
Number one.
We had him number one last week before the Rams game, and we've got him number one right now, the Saints. You can't run on him. You can't run on them. Now, I think they're susceptible, and you saw it on Sunday on the back end of the defense. But the two parts of this team, because Drew Brees is so great, that are being overlooked. Their offensive line has only allowed 9 sacks. Their offensive line now has become the Cowboys 3 years ago. Fewest sacks allowed. That's a great offensive line. We just don't know their names. We knew all the Cowboy guys because they were first-round picks. The second thing is you can't run on the Saints. So that defense is better than the Rams and the Patriots, and that offensive line is as good as the Rams and better than the Patriots. Saints, number one. Good stuff. Let me, I said last hour I was going to open the bottle of wine and let it breathe before I talked about it. The story was Tom Brady came out after the game and was asked by Jim Gray. He does an interview every Sunday or Monday with Jim Gray, and one of his quotes was, you know, you don't play Aaron Rodgers again until 2022, and Jim Gray asked Brady about that, and Brady came out and said, well, I plan on playing. You know, you guys all keep asking me about how long I'm going to play. And the quote here is, I'd like to go till I'm 45. I know I say that 100 times. Nobody believes me, but I feel good. I could go play another game tomorrow. I know what to do. It's fun. Who else gets to play in front of the 70,000 people and throw a football? And so anyway, Jim Gray asked him about potentially facing Rodgers again. 2022, it's scheduled, Monday Night Football.
Do you think this was the last meeting between you and Aaron? You're not scheduled for another regular season game for 4 years if you stay with the Patriots and he stays with the Packers.
Yeah, and you know, God willing, I'm still able to be out there doing something I love to do. Obviously, other quarterbacks that I face that I have so much respect and admiration for are really memories that I'll have for the rest of my life. And last night was really one of them for me. Hopefully, I get a chance to play, you know, an Aaron Rodgers-led team again.
You know, I'll just throw it out there. At this point, are you sure that Brady will be retired in 2022 and Rodgers won't? And I'm just going to throw some facts to you. Tom Brady has had two streaks in his career of 100-plus straight starts. One ended due to Deflategate. Aaron Rodgers' longest streak is 55 games. Aaron is smaller. He has been factually more brittle. He ad-libs more. He gets hit more. He's got Khalil Mack 9 more times minimum in the next 4 or 5 years. He's got that Viking pass rush. You know, Tom Brady is rarely touched, has no injuries in a decade, has the best support system in the entire NFL, owner down. His best trait is getting rid of the ball early. Rodgers is coming off a second major injury. He's a smaller athlete. He was wincing again Sunday. His most famous trait is holding on to the ball longer for the knockout punch downfield. You know, when I watch these two play, when I watch Aaron Rodgers, as Doug Gottlieb said, I see a quarterback who is increasingly frustrated, is getting hurt more, is brittle, is not as big as Brady to begin with, and the Packers have a history in the last 5 or 6 years. They develop offensive linemen brilliantly, and they let them go. Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach for Brady, I mean, folks, Tom gets smoked about once a year. Aaron gets smoked about 3 times a game. So when you line up these guys and say, oh, 4 years from now, I'm not so sure. I'm not taking the older guy who's a bigger athlete, gets rid of it sooner, ad-libs less, and doesn't have Khalil Mack in his division. I don't think it's crazy to say in 2022, Brady and Rodgers both here, and if you had to bet, Brady would be here and Rodgers wouldn't. Aaron, listen, I watched that game Sunday. How many times can Aaron get up, grabbing his wrist, grabbing his knee? I mean, the Packers have a history. They develop offensive linemen. They don't keep them. And he's an ad-libber. I know it sounds like hot takey, but I watch Brady and I'm like, you can do that for a long time. That offense, three steps out. The Texans open the year against them. They never touched Tom. You ever notice that? Eagles, great pass rush, Super Bowl, hot knife through butter. That offense is designed to beat great pass rushes. That's what that offense is designed to do. Take away great pass rushes. Scarnecchia, as long as he's on that offensive line coaching it, Tom can play as long as he wants. And he and Belichick appear to get along a little better now.
What's up, John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast, brought to you by Colin Cowherd's Podcast Network. If you like Colin's show, you will like mine. I talk a ton of football. Jerry Jones has a major problem on his hands. I talk about what he needs to do. John Harbaugh, big time overrated. Josh McDaniels is really going to be a head coach again. I can't see it. Bill Belichick still kicking butt. 3 and Out Podcast with me, that's John Middlecoff.
D'Angelo Hall is joining us, 15 years in the NFL, three-time Pro Bowler. So Troy Aikman came on the air, D'Angelo, and said this morning on Dallas Radio. Let's take a listen.
I've heard Jerry say, okay, look, we're going to do it differently. I'm going to do it differently. You know, I can no longer, but it's the same. Nothing changes. And that, to me, is the bigger issue. Beyond, yes, coaching is important, personnel, all those things are important, but how are you going about evaluating? How are you going about running the organization? And I have no idea. You know, I talk to people who have been inside the building and have a pretty good understanding of how things are run. And in a lot of ways, there's a lot of dysfunction. And that has to change if this team is going to be able to compete on a consistent basis like the teams that you look to around the league that seemingly are in the hunt each and every year.
So let's address that. You've got friends who play for the Cowboys, friends who did play for the Cowboys. When you talk to players, did they think the Cowboys were kind of dysfunctional?
No one ever speaks against, I guess, Jerry Jones publicly. And I think that's part of the problem. I think no one wants to really piss him off. And to hear Troy say that, I always thought Troy was one of those guys who was kind of drinking the Kool-Aid, the cowboy Kool-Aid.
Behind the rope.
Yeah, yeah. And so to hear him say that makes me think, wow, you know, I've underestimated Troy's assessment really of that organization. But for him to be that critical, because most guys don't really talk about what happens, you know, in Dallas. And I do think they're a little dysfunctional. I think we, me being a former Redskin, we always get that, you know, kind of that moniker as being
you
a dysfunctional,
were dysfunctional
organization.
Right.
Yeah, the Redskins. Because, you know, seemingly Dan Snyder always has his hands in the cookie jar.
Right.
I think as of lately, Dan's kind of stepped back. And now you look and you see Jerry. And Jerry's kind of even more involved and always talking. And I understand he's technically the GM, but, you know, like Troy said, at some point, we got to change the culture. And by changing the culture, it might mean, hey, Jerry, I know you love this thing and this is your baby, but you got to take a step back and let's pay the guys to do their jobs, because I don't think they're being allowed to really do their jobs.
D'Angelo Hall, I think it's an interesting point. I mean, you know, again, Washington was it's funny how you said Dan Snyder a step back at the end of the Raiders run. People forget how great the Raiders were. Mm-hmm. 70s, 80s, mm-hmm. 90s.
Yeah.
Al Davis aged, did not age well, and became not only a meddler, but mental capacity shrank. Jerry's sharp as a tack. I'm not mm-hmm. saying that. Mm-hmm. But I do think you make a great point. As an owner ages, Dan Snyder's becoming less meddling. Mm-hmm. Washington now. And then Dallas, Jerry is more meddling. Arthur Blank was not much of a meddler when you were in Atlanta.
No, he wasn't much of a meddler in a sense. He let the football guys do the football things. Arthur, I think what got him, especially having an athlete like Michael Vick when he took over that team, Arthur that is, he kind of gravitated towards Mike. And so I was kind of one of those guys right after Mike, you know, a couple years after Mike got drafted. And so, you know, we ate over at his house, me and my wife. And, you know, Arthur was very receptive to us. You know, we were young. I was 20 years old when I got drafted. So he almost felt as though he was a parent.
Sure, surrogate father, a parent. Yeah.
And Mike as well. Mike was young when he got drafted. But right after all that went down with Mike, Arthur kind of was like, look, I'm getting too close to these guys. I need to take a step back. So that kind of backed Arthur up in a sense. But Arthur never meddled when it came to football. He just really cared about the guys and the players that he was drafting.
Yeah, Jerry, meanwhile, thinks he's a football expert.
Yes, he does.
And there's your problems. By the way, you almost, speaking of great organizations, mm-hmm. I don't know if you've told this story. You watched New England Sunday night. Yeah. I mean, God, it's just the same machine.
Yeah, it keeps going.
It keeps going. You almost signed with them.
I did. And I didn't think the machine was that that powerful back then. But, you know, you take me back to 2008 when I actually—
10 years ago.
Yeah, when I finished that half a season in Washington, and I was, you know, kind of taking offers from different teams during free agency. Well, actually, right before free agency hit. So if this is tampering, I apologize for throwing anybody under the bus. But it was a little bit right before free agency hit, kind of how all the teams get on the phone, start hitting you up. And, you know, my agent had kind of worked the deal out with New England, and their max offer was 3 years, $27 million, which was around $9 million average. And at the time, they had just gave Randy Moss, I think, that same deal, I think, the year before. I can remember them telling me, like, look, we promised Randy we wouldn't pay anybody more than him. And so I'm sorry, but this is going to be our final offer. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, you know, I kind of always had my head wrapped around 10 a year. You know, I wanted to be at that 10 a year average. And, you know, obviously Washington was a place that I had spent – the second half of that season there. And so I was comfortable there.
Plus you went to Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I went to Virginia Tech. I grew up in Virginia. I always wanted to be a Redskin. And, you know, had I known then what I know now, probably would have signed in New England and did those 3 years there. But just knowing me mentally and hearing all the stories about New England, I don't know if I would have been mentally tough enough to
really
to be that kind of player. The later I was in my career, I think I would have fit in perfect there. But I think I was still a little bit of a me guy at that point in my career. So, I mean, but when you see great guys like, you know, Hall of Famers like Tom Brady and Randy Moss doing it the right way, maybe I would have just fell in line. But I don't know, man. And, you know, everything happens for a reason.
Right.
You know, a similar story. Even before I went to Washington to finish the year, I had an opportunity to go to Pittsburgh.
Oh, with Tomlin.
When I got cut from Oakland. And I've always known Mike Tomlin. He's from that 757 area of Virginia that I'm from. I'm a fan of his. I know him personally.
And you didn't go there either?
And I didn't go because Mike Tomlin in his recruitment, it was a, look, we're gonna let you return punts. We even, you know, throw you on offense. It was to be more so of a gimmick guy. And I was like, man, I just got cut from Oakland after signing a $70 million contract. I gotta let people know that I can still play corner and that I'm still a elite corner in this league. And yeah. So Mike wasn't really selling me on that. He was selling me on, yeah, you know, we got some injuries. You know, we'll work you in. And Washington was more so like, look, you're gonna come in and fight for a starting spot. And I was like, all right, I gotta go out and play, Mike. I'm sorry. And then that team goes and wins the Super Bowl. So I just can't get a ring, man. I can't get a ring to save my life.
Dang. Well, I love stories like that.
Yeah, it's
tough. Well, could it be you had a hell of a career. You played for 15. You were a three-time Pro Bowler, D'Angelo Hall. I was saying that there are statement wins and there are statement losses. Mm-hmm. Belichick's record after the bye is great. Andy Reid after the bye. Mike Tomlin after the bye. Sean Payton after the bye. Urban Meyer's 24-1 after a bye. Jason Garrett is sub 500 after a bye. D'Angelo, I'm watching Dallas last night. By the way, Tennessee was off a bye. Situationally, they were great. Third down, they were great. Red zone, they were great. I'm sorry, but you can't have 2 weeks to prepare and give me that. That was a nothing sandwich for 3.5 hours.
No, you're right, man. And I look at Jason Garrett, and I like him, and I want to root for him. As much as I really don't prefer Dallas, I mean, I like him. He's a former player. You want to root for him. He seems like a good guy. The guys in the locker room seem to like him. But they don't seem to play inspired football when I watch them
play. That's a good way
to
put it.
It was no sense of urgency.
No juice.
And I don't know if he's such a laid-back guy that he's too nice, and so the guys tend to run over him a little bit. I don't know because I'm not in that locker room, but – I mean, like you said, you had every opportunity to seize the moment. Earlier that day, you just found out the Redskins are losing all these starters. And they really haven't shown you that they can throw the ball downfield. You see Philly's right in front of you. And so you have a chance to make a statement. And you should have been prepared. But when I watch them, they just look vanilla. Like, they never tried to move Zeke around. They tried to just run him straight downhill. That wasn't working. He caught the one big pass out the backfield. But I would have been trying to move Zeke all over the field. I felt like it was certain times in that game where they told Dak, look, throw the ball to Amari Cooper no matter what. Because, I mean, even the first touchdown, Amari got open. But Allen Hurns was wide open in the back of the end zone. Like, you can't miss that. And to me, you know, the interception was definitely one of those plays that he came out the huddle saying, I'm throwing this ball.
No,
it
no,
was
no.
a forced throw.
Yep.
Two guys on him. I just don't feel like – Jason Garrett's really giving Dak a chance to succeed. You know, when you think about, you know, even watching Jared Goff when he first played in the NFL his rookie year, you know, we were like, gosh, you know, this kid isn't very good. And then he gets with a guy like Sean McVay, and now we're like, man, Jared Goff is amazing. Like, he can make every throw. And so, to me, it shows how important that quarterback and coach relationship is,
yes.
A quarterback and play caller. And I just don't think Dak is really given the best opportunity to cultivate his talent, man. And it doesn't matter who you put out there. If you aren't changing the offense up and giving him, you know, different looks and moving guys around and really scripting him for success, you can't just expect him to go out there and dice people up. That's not how today's NFL works.
Good stuff, D'Angelo Hall. For the record, Marcus Peters is remarkably talented.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He got sizzled this weekend. It's okay. Saints are good. Thomas is great. And do we have the bye? I will give Marcus Peters credit. He was brutally honest after the game. Here's what he said.
No, I can stand up. I can play better. I've been playing these last couple of weeks. And that's just being honest, you know. But with me, I just continue to fight, man. That's the type of player I am. Man. Who gives a you're going to get beat in football, you know. But you go out there, you compete to the highest of your ability, and happens.
Let me ask you. How do you guys have a short memory? Did you ever just get smoked? Have a Sunday where you went home that day and you're like, man, I don't even want to go to film session Monday.
First off, I love Marcus Peters because most guys don't do that. Most guys don't stand up and say, hey, look, I was one of those guys that if I got beat, look, I got beat. I got to play better. I was one of those guys, too, that I didn't mind taking the blame when I didn't play well. And so for him to do that in front of the media, you know, I was even told he went up in the meeting room and talked to the defense and said the same thing. Like, look, I'm going to play better. I have to play better. But it's just, I mean, you're kind of born with it. That's why people always ask, you know, what does it take to be a good DB? Yeah, it takes good feet. It takes, you know, toughness. You got to be able to hit. You got to do this. You got to do that. But more so than anything, it's a mindset. Like, it's a mindset that at the end of the day, it's me against you and I'm going to win. Period. And certain times you just meet a dude who's better than you.
On that day.
Yeah. I mean, Randy Moss was better than me on certain days. T.O. was better than me on certain days. Certain days I was better than him. And so it happens. You get beat. But, I mean, you got to forget about it. Because, Colin, at the end of the day, whether I make that play or not, say I get a pick. Cool. I still got to go play another play. You know, it's not like a fight where – you know, you hit a guy, he's bleeding, he's hurting. I mean, it's football.
They ain't calling the fight.
They're not calling the game. You're going to have four more quarters. So whether you get a pick in the first quarter, you got to throw that out and keep playing. And so, you know, you want to go out there and you want to make plays, but ultimately you understand those guys get paid too.
Yeah.
And that's the bigger picture. And, you know, I never mind getting beat. Obviously, I didn't want to get beat. But I never mind because I learned something about myself and I learned something about that player. And as long as you learn something about that, I mean, Marcus Peters got beat on a double move. I'm thinking of Malcolm Butler. Malcolm Butler got beat on the double move. But Marcus Peters got beat just looking in the backfield. I mean, those are things that when you're looking at film, Marcus Peters can be brutally honest with himself and say, man, I can definitely play better than that.
Yeah.
Like, I had my eyes in the backfield right here. I jumped. I should have just kept running, go for the tackle instead of going from breaking the pass up. And so there's a lot of coaching moments through the course of a football game, and especially as DBs, man, we always critique every little thing because it is such a game of inches that, you know, two more steps and then making that jump as a DB, you might tip that ball as opposed to, you know, a 75-yard touchdown.
Well, I love DBs. I've had Kareem Jackson and you on the show today. I give my love. Wide receivers wear me out. DBs I always bring on the show.
I appreciate it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app. After almost 3 hours, Colin apparently hasn't gotten to the point yet. Quit holding out on us, Cowherd. It's the best for last.
So, in the last three games, Joe Flacco has been, it's regressed. He's bad. Baltimore now has a losing record. They host Cincinnati this weekend. I'll take the Bengals to win that game. And I'm watching all the rookie quarterbacks. Sam Darnold's getting the you-know-what beat out of him. Baker Mayfield has no chance. Josh Rosen. And I'm thinking, I'm in the interesting business. Lamar Jackson is interesting. And in the plays that he's come into the game in the last couple of weeks, I'm like, it's okay. I mean, everybody else is playing. Josh Allen played. He's not ready. Why not play Lamar Jackson? I mean, at this point, if you lose at home to Cincinnati, the season's over. You're done. You're not catching the Steelers. And I mean, so John Harbaugh, coach of the Ravens, was asked about this because the Raven reporters are seeing what I'm seeing. What's the point? Flacco's regressed badly. Here was the press conference.
When you mentioned that you would like to see Lamar on the field more, are you meaning could he start a game?
Joe's played well, so I don't want to get into all that. You know, we're rolling right now with what we got. Of course, at some point in time, I mean, this guy's a quarterback. I mean, we've said that from the beginning, and anybody that wants to dispute that, come to practice like you guys do or you watch him play. He's improving all the time. He's getting better as a quarterback, an NFL quarterback all the time.
Well, Flacco's not rolling. Flacco throws the ball inaccurately. That's not great for a quarterback. So I said, you know what? Today's election day, and I watch all these political ads, and I thought I can do some political ads. Vote for Lamar Jackson as a starting quarterback. So I thought, you know, some of these ads are a little manipulative. I don't need to go there. I can state facts only with my campaign for Lamar Jackson. Here's our first political ad.
Joe Flacco has thrown 6 interceptions this season. You know how many interceptions Lamar Jackson has thrown? None. Vote Lamar Jackson for Ravens QB. This ad was paid for by the Committee to Get Rid of Aging Quarterbacks.
Completely accurate. No manipulation.
Not a whole lot of context around it.
I've got 15 seconds, Joy. I don't have time for context.
There.
All right. If you don't like that one, I've got another one I think is totally accurate. Go ahead.
Joe Flacco has won 10 playoff games in his career. But how many playoff games has he won this season? 0. Vote Lamar Jackson for Ravens QB. This ad was paid for by the Committee of Miserable Ravens Fans.
Again, this is not inaccurate.
No, it's not.
My candidate looks at Joe Flacco and is every bit as worthy as Joe Flacco, who has not won a playoff game this year.
It is a knock on this year.
Yeah. Oh, you're still not impressed. How about another political ad?
This season, Joe Flacco has a lowly passer rating of 84.2. Meanwhile, Lamar Jackson has a passer rating of 108.7, putting him on pace to surpass Aaron Rodgers as the greatest statistical quarterback in NFL history. Vote Lamar Jackson for Ravens QB. This ad was paid for by the Committee for Fair Statistical Representations.
It's the strongest one, actually.
It's right on point. And again, you can get into context. He is on pace. I didn't say minimum throws required.
No.
He is on pace to have the greatest statistical year passer rating of all time. How can you not start Lamar Jackson? I predicted week 11, but it is week 11 next week, and they're going to start Flacco, Harbaugh said. And I think if Cincinnati comes into Baltimore and wins, and I loved Baltimore before the season. I was all in on the Ravens. Then Oakland comes in town next, and I think they should start Lamar Jackson. By the way, I don't need to run any more ads. I think I have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt my candidate is worthy of a starting position. But you know what? Let's be honest. Let's drive the point home with my strongest political ad for Lamar Jackson yet.
For years, Joe Flacco has been telling everyone his first name is Joe. But if you look up his records, you'll see his real name is Joseph. Makes you wonder what else he's hiding. Vote Lamar Jackson for Ravens QB. This ad was paid for by Wikipedia.
Flacco's just not honest. He's deceptive.